This meeting is now being recorded.
Certainly. Thank you so much, Julie. Well, welcome, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the RPM Subteam for Sunrise Data Review Call on the 13th of February, 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio branch, would you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind everyone to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will hand the meeting back over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
And thank you very much, Michelle. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So on the agenda today, we have the updates to statements of interest, and then really items 2 and 3 will be combined in that we are going to look at the charter questions through 12, and noting that charter questions 6 to 12 have some new text that we some text that we did not get a chance to cover last week, and so we'll address that text, those comments, which will be noted in green as we go through the charter questions against the data and including the analysis of the data sources that were homework for this week. And then may I ask if anyone has any other business? Then at this rate, I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to David McCauley, who, as the co-chair of the subteam, will be chairing today. David, please.
Thanks, Julie. It's David McCauley speaking. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the call. As Julie said, we will combine agenda items 2 and 3 and simply go through the documents. And with respect to a good number of them, we'll be looking at the analysis group independent review plus two follow-ups they did. And then with respect to 6 to 12, we'll be looking at previously submitted documents that's indicated in green in the documents. And so why don't we go ahead and begin? And I'm going to be toggling between the documents that I have up on in my internet browser and the Adobe room, so bear with me. If I fail to see your hand, I'll get to it as quickly as I can. But I'm going to turn first to the preamble question, and in with respect to the Sunrise preamble charter question, I do see that perhaps along with 6 to 12, there are some comments that are in green, especially from Griffin, that is, that relate to other sources of data. So you'll see when you go through that document that Griffin has indicated, yes, it's helpful with respect to sub-questions A through C, and he's indicated in the third column just exactly how and where that happens. And then following Griffin, I said possibly there may be some help in the analysis group's independent review. I should note parenthetically, and because it pertains to a lot of my a lot of other documents, is in as much as the Sunrise portion of the analysis group independent review, which is dealt with primarily in pages, I forget the exact number, but in 30 to 37 range, somewhere in that. While there was helpful information, and there certainly was, it's also, I think, helpful to look at the Appendix I, which is a summary. And it sort of brings us back, I just want to make this one parenthetical note, it brings us back to the discussion we've had before of statistical validity versus anecdotal information. And I wanted to just sort of underscore that in Appendix I, you will see that some of it is anecdotal. For instance, in one or two cases, actually from an individual, such as a TMCH agent said this, a registry said that. So I just wanted to make that clear. It's useful information, I think. We've had that discussion before, but just to be clear about what Appendix I is. And that actually is in the independent review from pages, as I recall, from pages 64 to 67. I thought it quite helpful. So then following my comments, Greg has a series of comments pointing to potential helpfulness here with respect to sub-question A, with respect to sub-question C, D, A, B, D, et cetera, et cetera, and Greg points out specific specifically in what sections. And so I will now ask if anybody has a comment on that, if any Griffin, myself, or Greg want to embellish on what we said. I see George's hand up. Let me just finish one thing, George. Then I'll ask you to take the floor and go ahead and do that, and then we will move sequentially 1 through 12. Thank you. So first hand up and first to take the floor is George. George, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, George Griffin, Transcript. Yeah, it's nice to see some new names on the Google Docs this week, so hopefully everybody had a chance to shine. I still did.
George, could I interrupt just for a second and ask? I don't know if others are having this issue, and I do have a head cold, but could you speak up just a little bit?
Yeah, I'll try. Thanks. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, thanks.
Yeah, George Kirkless. Yeah, in addition to the nuggets that other people were able to unearth this week, I would add Table 1 from page 9, which shows the most frequently requested terms, which were all very common words or acronyms, the top 10. And so the sunrise impact of giving them first dibs is relevant to this question. Also on page 35, there was a note about how the larger trademark holders make more sunrise registrations. So that might be relevant to this charter question, because one would think that the larger companies would be better positioned for enforcement outside of sunrise. But that's open to interpretation. Thanks.
I was just speaking to a muted phone. Thank you, George. Next in the queue is Kathy. If you would please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, David. This is Kathy. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Terrific. I'm sorry to hear you're not feeling well. I just had a general question, which I always have when we do the preamble first, which is whether this document will stay open so that after we go through the more detailed questions, we can come back to this kind of umbrella document and put in conclusions that we may have gathered from the data that we're analyzing. So question is the document going to stay open? Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. This is David. I'll attempt to give that an answer. And I recall your comment from a week ago or maybe 2 weeks ago asking that the preamble be considered at the end. I hadn't forgotten that, but I wanted to go through the document sequentially in this call. And I think you do make a good point in that the Sunrise preamble charter questions are sort of overarching questions. And I will take it up with Greg. I can't make a decision by myself, but I think you're making a reasonable point. And having said that, I see that the next person in the queue is Susan Payne. So, Susan, why don't you go ahead and take the floor?
Yeah, thanks, David. It's Susan. I just wanted to say, firstly, I did also put a couple of comments in the table as well, but I think they're the ones after Gregson, so they go on to another page. And then
I apologize for missing that.
No worries. And then with up to those who are on the claims call and have heard me already say this, I did just want to make a kind of overarching comment about the analysis report, which is that throughout the report they make numerous references to the lack of available data and the various sort of assumptions and conclusions they've drawn, many of which are based on no evidence whatsoever, but are simply it could be this, it could be that. And so, you know, we certainly there is some data in there, and we can certainly you know, use it to help inform us, but we do have to be really careful when we're using the kind of conclusions and the assumptions that the analysis group have made, because they are not data and they're quite often based on nothing more than possibility of the consultant. So I'm going to try not to keep saying that every time we go on to a different question, but just wanted to make that overarching comment. Thanks.
Thank you, Susan. Next in the queue is Greg. Greg, why don't you go ahead, please?
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. First, you know, with answer to Kathy's question, although, you know, you and I need to talk, we may need to talk to the co-chairs about it. I agree with what George said in the chat, was we shouldn't put conclusions in this document because we also have a separate survey document, right? So I think, you know, this document is kind of the data gathering document. And the analysis and conclusions should be living elsewhere. Ultimately, of course, in a report from the subteam. But, you know, just logistically, this is probably not the place they will be. But, you know, of course, the documents will be reopened. And, you know, to the extent that there's analysis that's been put in here, you know, it could be transferred over, you know, as a part of partial starting point or continuing point in the other document. And maybe staff has even been doing that along the way. And with regard to what Susan said, I think, you know, what Susan said is, again, not all that different from what George has been saying about this, too, which is, you know, based both on the lack of data and on the analysis group's willingness to proceed fearlessly, even with a lack of data. This is, not a highly persuasive, or predictive, document. It's useful, but, asterisks all around. So I don't think you'll have to keep on saying it, Susan. But I think, you know, if anybody relies too heavily on this, you know, saying this is the way it is, as opposed to a policy argument that this is the way it should be, or then I think, you know, we'll revisit that point. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Fair points. Seeing no further hands in the queue, let's move on to question number one. And you'll see that there are new comments, the green comments, from a number from Greg. Having a little bit of trouble scrolling there. One from Griffin that goes back to Deloitte. There's a comment by myself somewhere. I've lost track of it. And Michael Karanikolas. And so you'll see that in each case, people have indicated where in the analysis group independent review, where it can be found. So I will open the floor to this. George, I see, has a hand up. I'll open the floor to this particular document in case anyone wants to build on what they've said or make a comment about the data source. So, George, go ahead, please.
Yeah, George Kirkus, the transcript, building on what my colleagues have suggested, I would also add from page 28 and also on page 3, where they talk about the costs for the registrars and the registries of expanded matches. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Let me just refer back to something you said to the previous document, too, about Table 1. I would simply add to that Tables 11 and 12 in the preamble document are also of interest from the analysis group particularly on Sunrise. But these are good points, and hopefully they will be captured. And Maxim, your hand is next, so why don't you go ahead and take the floor on document number one, question one.
Maxim Azoba, I just wanted to know about the not exact match item. As I understand, it was discussed, and we ended up talking about the investigation of how much is it going to affect systems, including ICANN system, registrar system, DMCH, and it ended up with nothing. So we discussed it, but we didn't come to any conclusion. So I believe if we start talking about the extended match, so-called extended match, again, we're going to come back to these investigations. Thanks.
Thank you, Maxim, and it's a fair point. I do think Greg made a good point in describing this document as sort of the data gathering tool, but you make a good point. I don't see any further hands with respect to this document, so we're going to move to document number two, and Griffin, myself, Michael, Susan, and Greg have added comments on this. This is the document dealing with charter questions 2A with whether Registry Sunrise or premium name pricing practices unfairly limit the ability of trademark owners to participate during Sunrise, and if that's the case, how extensive could it or is it? Kathy, your hand is up first on this, so why don't you go ahead and take the floor.
Actually, David, I just wanted my hand went up at the end of question one. I apologize.
Oops,
can I just
sorry.
Briefly there, would that be okay? We don't have to go back to the document.
Please do. Go ahead.
But so charter question one is about the availability of Sunrise registration. Should it be only for identical matches? And I just wanted to point out that Michael Kernikolas actually put in some quotes from the analysis group that addressed this directly and indicate that it would be of little benefit to the trademark holders kind of to expand this. And so I just wanted to point people to that data and the analysis that was done on that. That's towards the end of the main report, like 37 to 38. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. And this toggling that I'm doing sounds from a couple of comments like I'm not doing it well, so I may slow down just a little bit. And I will ask again one final time about charter question number two, the one about Registry Sunrise premium name pricing. On that particular document, if anyone wants to comment or enlarge on the comments that they made in the document. Not seeing any hands, I will move on to the document dealing with charter question three. Be a little bit more careful this time to make sure I get all the comments. This is the question that asks in three subparts, should registry operators be required to create a mechanism that allows trademark owners to challenge the determination that second level names premium name are reserved? Should registry operators under question B be required to create a release mechanism in the event that premium or reserved name is challenged successfully so the owner can register the name during Sunrise? And what concerns under question C would be raised by either or both? And so with respect to new comments here, we have comments from Griffin, and where he answers yes, he has an indication in the analysis group's report, page 65, where that would be found. And so I will then invite comments on this. Maxim's hands is up first. So, Maxim, why don't you go ahead and take the floor?
Maxim Alzoba, it's a note about the previous question. The thing is that premium pricing is pricing, and pricing is outside of remit of our group. So just notice, because it's of so-called picket fence in contracts of registries and registrars. So even if we invent something, we can't do much. Thanks.
Thank you, Maxim. So I will then ask if there's any comments on charter question three. Maxim, your hand is back up, so that must be a new hand, so go ahead and take the floor.
The new hand, it's about reserved names. As I mentioned before, the reserved names, first, it's not a static item. It's something which changes dynamically, and it's not only for Sunrise period. It exists at any moment of time, from the start of the software platform work till the death of it. And it's something which allows system, which works actually almost real time. And there is no way registry can say, okay, wait a second, we don't reserve this name. Yes, we have to review something. We have to establish something. No, it's something which... this is decided on software level. It's a list. If it can pass to registration phase or not. And if some way to affect one of the most important mechanisms in software platforms or registries around the world, we might affect security and stability of the system. And I do not believe it's in our remit to do so. Thanks.
Thank you, Maxim. Closing down then Sunrise Charter question three, we can move on to four, question four. And this is the question, are registry operator reserve name practices unfairly limiting participation in Sunrise by trademark owners? Should section 1.3.3 of spec one of the registry agreement be modified to address that? Third question, should registry operators be required to publish reserve name lists? What registry concerns would be raised by that publication? what problems would it solve? And finally, should registry operators be required to provide trademark owners in the trademark clearinghouse notice the opportunity to register a domain name should the registry operator release it? What registry concerns would be raised by this requirement? So new comments in green, we have Griffin indicating no. I took the approach that possibly is the case in page 65 of Appendix I in the analysis group report. And Susan Payne also indicated limitations in data with respect to 4A, question 4A, and pointed to the analysis group report at page 35. So if anybody would like to build on their comments or make an observation about these as data sources, please do so, and I'll look for hands for a second before we move on to question 5A. And I'm toggling madly, but I don't see any new hands, and so I'll move on to question 5A. This is a Sunrise Charter question that dealt with, does the current 30-day minimum for Sunrise period serve its intended purpose, especially in light of the fact that many registry operators ran 60-day Sunrise? Sub-questions, are there unintended results to this? Two, does the ability of registry operators to expand Sunrise periods create uniformity concerns that should be addressed by the working group? Three, are there benefits observed when Sunrise periods extended beyond 30 days? And four, are there disadvantages to that? Here in the new information, the green, we have Griffin, myself, indicating no. Michael has indicated yes. Table 12 and pointing to table 12 in the analysis group report. And I will ask, and also at page 36, and I will ask anyone would like to comment on these data sources or enlarge on what they said. I shall wait a minute for any hands up. Susan, your hand is up. Why don't you go ahead?
Thank you. Oh, good, Michael. It was actually a request because I didn't really understand Michael's point about table 12, and I'm sure it's me rather than him, but I was wondering if he could explain it in more detail, so perhaps I can understand what he's getting to. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael, you're next. Why don't you go ahead?
Sure. So table 12, it's actually on page 37, not 36. So that's an error on my part. I think the general point is just to flag relatively low EIPA Sunrise period, even among trademark holders that are aware of the Sunrise. And so, you know, I think that tied to arguments that a longer Sunrise period wouldn't necessarily make a difference, because if you look at the broader statistics there, you're finding that there's not a huge amount of uptick even among people that have awareness of the Sunrise. So fundamentally, I think that argues against extending it out as being a sort of a lot of value.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any further hands on this question, so we're going to move to 5B in just a second. So doing that, moving on to 5B, this is the question, light of evidence gathered above, should Sunrise period continue to be mandatory or become optional? There's two sub-questions. Should the working group consider returning to the original recommendation from IRT and STI of Sunrise period or trademark claims in light of other concerns, including freedom of expression? In considering mandatory versus optional, should the registry operators be allowed to choose between Sunrise and claims, make one of them mandatory? So on this question, in the new information, we have Griffin indicating no. I said possibly at pages 35, 30, 34, 5, and 38 in the analysis group independent report. Michael also points to the report at the same pages 34 and 35 and indicates, yes, this could be helpful. Susan also made comments again along with limited anecdotal input in both the page analysis group page 34 and page 6. So George's hand is first in the queue, I'll say, George, why don't you go ahead and take the floor?
George Krikos with the transcript. First off, with regards to Griffin's answers that are in green, those are actually responses to last week's homework, not this week's homework. So you might want to take that into account.
Thank you.
We made that point in the chat room, but you might have missed it because you're presiding. As for this question, I found four additional data points that might be relevant to this question. On page three, it talks about there's a reduced need for trademark holders to utilize Sunrise registrations. On pages 16 and also on page 18, it talks about the 0.3% dispute rate, which would also tend to answer to this question. Also on page 65, it talks about how registries are less convinced that Sunrise actually helps trademark owners. And on page 66, it talks about general lack of interest in Sunrises compared to the past rounds of TLDs, like I guess .info, .biz, and .XXX, and so on. Thank you.
Thank you, George. So we will make a note of that page. Let me just toggle back here. Page 3. Pages 16 and 18, and then also 65 and 66. Useful information on these questions for the reasons noted. Thank you. So not seeing any further hands on 5B, we are going to move to question 6. What are the sunrises? I'm sorry. Was that Kathy? Was that you?
It was. My hand. Yep.
Okay,
I apologize. Okay. So just wanted to point to, you know, some interesting data here that Michael posted in the summary on page 3, as George just said, and on 34 and 35, that seems to suggest kind of an optional model because trademark owners seem to be choosing among mechanisms. So that the trademark claim service may reduce the need for trademark holders to utilize Sunrise registrations, reading a quote, and also that the blocking services, using blocking services, the private blocking services, quote, trademark holders may feel less necessity to utilize the Sunrise period. So the optimal combination of mechanisms, you know, maybe ones that the registries choose. So I just wanted to share that 34 and 35 are interesting pages for this. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Susan's hand is now up. So, Susan, you're next. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, thanks. I think that's I recognize that's what I was going to say. It's one of these many examples of them basically speculating and drawing conclusions that aren't necessarily there. Regarding the blocking mechanisms, I think it is important to bear in mind that obviously we don't have blocking mechanisms across every registry. You know, there are registry-specific mechanisms. And so if you were in a right-side registry, to use an example, and you chose the blocking version, then you didn't need a Sunrise registration because you blocked. But the block is effectively a cost-effective series of registrations, if you like, equivalent to doing a Sunrise. But I don't think we can start saying, you know, trademark owners had a choice to have a blocking mechanism and therefore they didn't need the Sunrise. Unless you all want to start talking about let's have a block across PAN registry. You know, I'm very happy to have a conversation about that, but no one else seems to want to do that. So that's all I wanted to say on that one. Thanks.
Thank you, Susan. Next in the queue is Michael. Please go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, just in response to the first half of that, you know, I think in both of the passages that I posted, they are showing their work, and they're mentioning how the results that they have are supporting or relating to the conclusions that they're drawing. So you may not agree with those conclusions, and you may not agree that the data supports the conclusions, and that's a fine perspective to take. But they are, in both of those instances, say, here's the results that we got, and we believe that it leads to this conclusion. So, you know, at the very least, it's not conclusions being drawn from no data. It's because they are, in both cases, expressing why they believe the data supports the conclusions. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. One more hand, Susan, come back. So you have the floor now.
Yeah, but I don't think they're drawing a conclusion that this is a selection of one over the other. Are they? I mean, it doesn't seem to me that they are. They are drawing various conclusions based on you know, their assumptions, but they're not drawing that particular control assumption. You are.
Thanks, Susan. Michael, do you have any final comment on that?
Sorry, are you saying in terms of the conclusions for the actual charter questions?
Yeah. Okay, so, Michael, any comment?
Well, in terms of whether it should be... Yeah, sure. Sorry, I don't want to just monopolize this. I'll happy to follow up on this.
Okay. Any further comments then on question 5B or additions? If not, we're going to move to question 6. This is the first one that we mentioned where there was some carryover from last week, and so this is not simply limited now. New comments are not simply limited to the three sources, the applicant guidebook, analysis group, analysis group report and follow-ups. So on this question, what are Sunrise dispute resolution policies and are any changes needed? Are SDRPs serving the purposes for which they were created? And if not, should they be better publicized, better used, or changed? And we have comments in green from George, extensive comments indicating input from registry operator responses and Deloitte and other sources. We have Kathy Griffin indicating helpfulness in certain respects. With one possible indication to the applicant guidebook, Appendix I, and then Greg also said somewhat with a reference to Appendix I. So my question, as you can imagine, is does anybody have a comment they want to enlarge on their comments here or otherwise make an observation in these respects? And Kathy's hand is up. She's first in queue. Go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah. David, let me just double check. We didn't hit this one last week, right? That's what you were saying?
Yes. That's right.
Okay. So going back to the register.
Kathy, you're coming through quite faint. So if you could just speak up a little bit.
Okay. I will. Is this better? Sorry, bad cell phone.
Yep. No, that's fine.
Okay. Good. So I just wanted to point to my comment where we have some really interesting answers on this one. Are the SDRPs serving the purposes for which they were created? Donut, across hundreds of GTLDs, has not had a single centralized dispute policy. The same for PIR, which was probably a smaller Sunrise rollout. But the Sunrise dispute resolution policy was really premised on the openness of the Trademark Clearinghouse database and the ability to review and challenge trademark owners who use the Sunrise or someone who had an equal right to be in the Sunrise. And it can't serve its purpose. You can't use it if you can't access it. So I think we're getting some pretty clear answers here. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Next in the queue is George. Please go ahead, George.
Yeah, George Kirkus of the Transcript. Yeah, this was kind of answered by the Deloitte survey, but I think it's very important to note that let's suppose that a domain name is taken in Sunrise and you attempt to register that domain name. All that you're going to see is that the domain name is taken. You're not actually going to see a claims notice. You're not going to see anything related to, you know, which trademark was used to get that name. So Kathy's point is, you know, entirely correct. You won't actually see the registrant contact for the TMCH record, all the jurisdiction, the goods and services, all that stuff is only visible if the domain name is available, in which case it wasn't registered in Sunrise. So it's kind of a very weird thing that this database is not public. Thank you.
Thank you, George. And Did you? Okay, George. That's. Is anyone else wish to make comment with respect
David,
to questions?
David, this is Brian. Can you hear me? I'm only on audio. I'm sorry.
Nope, we can hear you. Go ahead, Brian.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, actually, we touched on this a little bit in the earlier call, and I think there was a question about whether what, just to pick up on what Kathy said, whether it's right to say that a person doesn't have information about the trademark when a claims notice is triggered. So I just wanted to mention that, and then depending on whether it is or not, that might help inform the discussion. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian. And so there's no one further in the queue right yet, and if not, we're going to move on to question 7, which again is one of those that's carried over from last week in certain respects. The questions are, can SMD files be used for Sunrise period reservations after they've been canceled or revoked, and how prevalent is this as a problem? And we have comments from George referring to the Deloitte documents and extensive comments. Griffin, also from registry operators and Deloitte, has made some comments from helpful. I indicated that the analysis group was probably not all that helpful. With those comments being made about number 7, I'm going to see if anyone has anything further they wish to say or in this respect, and it appears not. Whoops, Kathy, your hand's up. So why don't you go ahead and take the floor?
Hi, David. It's a question for those who posted answers, which is, what's the answer? Can an SMD file be used for Sunrise period registration, and I guess it would say globally protected marks registrations as well, after they've been canceled or revoked? If anybody has a quick answer to that, that would be great. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy, for posing the question. Susan's hand is up next. So, Susan, why don't you go ahead and take the floor?
No, they can't.
Susan, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Oh. George, your hand is up. Why don't you go ahead and take the floor?
Yeah, George, quick, just for the transcript. I'm not sure that Susan's answer is correct. It may be, but my interpretation of what Deloitte told us is that the onus is on the former trademark owner, i.e. the customer of the TMCH, to actually tell Deloitte that the mark has been canceled. So if they don't actually go through and tell Deloitte that the mark has been canceled or revoked, the SMD file is still valid. This actually would be less the case if the SMD file is generated dynamically, i.e. for every new TLD launch, it has to be generated for that TLD. But I'm not sure of the mechanics of that, whether that's actually being done. But from what Deloitte said in their documents, it still seems to be valid, even if the underlying mark has been canceled. Thanks.
Thank you, George. Susan has her hand up, so go ahead, Susan. You're next.
Thanks. Sorry. Apologies. I may have misunderstood Kathy's question. I thought she asked if the SMD file could be used when it's been canceled. So if I answered the wrong question, then apologies.
Thanks, Susan. That was my understanding as well. But George's hand's up. I was going to ask you, George, if you had anything further to say in light of what Susan just said. But you're the only hand up right now, so why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, George Krikos again. I was answering the question if the mark has been canceled or revoked, so maybe I was looking at it differently. So if the SMD file itself has been canceled, presumably not. But I was more answering the question if the underlying mark is canceled or revoked. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, George. It was my impression that the question was relating to revocation of an SMD file. I will wait just one second, Kathy, if you want to clarify in any respect, but otherwise we are going to move to question 8. And I'm going to toggle now to question 8. And it's another carryover. This question deals with limited registration periods, approved launch programs, and qualified launch programs. three questions. One, are these are limited registration periods in these in need of review vis-a-vis the Sunrise? Same question with respect to the other two. Second question, are the approved launch programs and qualified launch program period in need of review? And final question, what aspects of the limited registration periods are in need of review? And so we have new information from George from the Deloitte. You'll see where he points out specific information. Griffin was of the opinion no. I was of the opinion no with respect to the analysis group reports, and Greg Chatton also added information from the appendix I of that analysis group report indicating some potentially useful information. So I will come back and look for a hand up. I see George's. Go ahead, George. You're first in the queue.
Yeah, first quick question for the transcript. I agree with Greg's point that he added, but he missed the second column, so he might want to put a yes in that second column. In addition, for the analysis group report, on page 7, they do mention that 97% of the marks were Latin script, and so that might have an impact on geographically oriented TLDs. And also on page 7, it mentioned that there were only 1,700 users with the United States of America really dominating, and so that might affect geographical TLDs, and local TLDs, for example, the Moscow example. You don't want to necessarily give American marks higher priority in Sunrise than local brands from Russia. Thank you.
Thank you, George. That's useful. Anything further on questions 8? Not seeing any, we'll move on to question 9. In light of the evidence gathered above, should the scope of Sunrise registrations be limited to the categories of goods and services for which the trademark's actually registered and put into the clearinghouse? And recognizing this, too, as a carryover question, we have information from George, Deloitte responses from Kathy, follow-up questions from Deloitte. Griffin indicates yes. These are all indicating yes. Deloitte responses. I took a no with respect to the analysis group report, and Greg had some limited observed. There was some limited help from the, I believe that's from the analysis group report, page 26. And so I will come back to Adobe and see if anyone has a hand up or if there's any comments with respect to this. Kathy, your hand's up dealing with question 9, so why don't you go ahead and take the floor.
Yeah, can you hear me, David?
Can. It's a little bit faint again, but no, I could hear that.
Okay. I will try to raise the volume. Okay, so here we're going back. Great. We're going back to last week. We're going back to follow-up questions from Deloitte. And we're looking at this question of limiting the scope of Sunrise registrations to the categories of goods and services. We're looking at that question now in light of the fact that Deloitte has told us, and we've talked about this before, but it's relevant here, and we haven't talked about it here yet, that Deloitte is now accepting much more than trademarks. They're accepting European geographical indications, protected designations of origin, protected appellations of origin, and so, one way to, and so this is not anticipated when the Sunrise was created, these very broad non-trademark registrations in the trademark clearinghouse. So one way to address the overbreadth of the trademark clearinghouse is to limit Sunrise registration, is to tie the categories of goods and services of a Sunrise registration to the categories of goods and services in the trademark clearinghouse. This would create, fewer side effects and would have, fewer, it would create fewer side effects. Thanks, David.
Thank you, Kathy. Next in the queue is Greg. Go ahead, please, Greg.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. I'm having deja vu because it seems like 2 years ago or so that we were discussing the issue of what was showing up in the database, which, to my mind, at least at that time, seemed to be a misinterpretation by Deloitte of the created by statute prong of what was supposed to be going into the database. So that, I think we have to go back and look at why those things are going into the database before we decide they should be in the database. And, you know, if we get further data on that, or that'd be helpful, you know, to the extent that we're, you know, dealing with data right now. I think there's some good discussion of the NIST classifications and the difficulty when we get to the analysis group of how they of their ability to work with them. So you know, that just kind of, you know, goes to the larger point of, you know, limited utility and accuracy, if you will, of those types of that type of data, and whether it, but that's a discussion really more for the analysis point than the data gathering point. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. There are no further hands in the queue, so I'm going to move on to question, well, actually it's an exhortation labeled Sunrise Charter Question 10. Explore use of types of proof required by the Trademark Clearinghouse when purchasing domains in the Sunrise period. We have this is another carryover question. We have information from George with respect to Deloitte, from Griffin, also with respect to Deloitte, both indicating, yes, there's helpful information to look at. Excuse me. Sorry about that. I took the position from the analysis group that it was not that helpful with respect to this particular question. And so I'm going to see – go back and see if there's anyone in the queue. Greg, your hand's up. Why don't you go ahead and take the floor?
Old hand.
Whoops, okay. If there's anyone else that would like to make a comment in this respect, not seeing any. I'm just going to come back real quick one more time. Nope, not seeing any. I will move on to Charter Question 11. How effectively can trademark holders who use non-English scripts language be able to participate in Sunrise, including IDN Sunrises? And two, should any of them be further internationalized, such as in terms of service providers, languages served, that kind of thing? So, another carryover question. George, Griffin, and I all have said no, and that's it. Little explanation. And so I'm going to ask if anyone has any comment. George has a hand up, so I'm going to give the floor to George. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. George, quick question for the transcript. The no list for the now, sorry, for the Deloitte responses. For this question, I would cite those two same references that I cited before on page 7, namely the 97% Latin script and the 700 mm-hmm. users dominate with the United States dominating. They might be relevant pieces of data to help answer this question. Thank you.
Thank you. That's useful. And so, no further hands on that. I will move to question 12. Should Sunrise registrations have priority over other registrations under specialized GTLDs? And two, should there be a different rule for some registries, such as certain types of specialized GTLDs, for instance, community or GOTLDs, based on their published registration eligibility policies? Examples include police.paris and police.nyc for GOTLDs and windows.construction for specialized GTLDs. And it's a carryover question. We have George indicating yes with respect to the Deloitte report. Kathy also saying yes, Deloitte's detailed replies, and Griffin also points to the same source, saying, yes, I said probably not so much. And back I come to Adobe to see if there's any comments. George is first in the queue. Why don't you go ahead, George?
Yeah, George Rickles again for the transcript. Again, I would cite page 7 of the analysis group report, that 97% Latin script and the 1,700 users mostly, with the United States dominating. So that might affect the GOTLDs and IDN for the Latin script. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Maxim, you're next. Go ahead, please.
Maxim Alzoba. As I mentioned during previous calls, the non-working ALP mechanism, which hypothetically was designed to help geos to establish their way of lifecycle domains, the situation led to moments where registries, GeoTLDs, had to use reserved name lists for this. I mean, to deliver your names to monuments, public services, etc., etc. So in absence of working mechanisms, which actually only one of all geos decided to do, to go through the process to the full extent, spending few years, but the city themselves, they have lots of money for that. And yeah, they have lots of time. So that's it. So those items should be tied. The special rights for Sunrise have to be in ALP, but because of the non-functioning implementation, GeoTLDs couldn't use it. So please add ALP to this item, or just we need to review it, both items together.
Thank you, Maxim. Kathy is next in the queue. Go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, this is Kathy, and I'm going to ask Maxim to define at some point ALP for us, because there are so many acronyms, and when you look them up, they're still pretty broad. So if ALP has a special meaning, and I'm sure it does, if you could share it, Maxim, that would be great. That was not one that I could easily find. Okay, so to the Sunrise Charter question 12, should the Sunrise registrations have priority over other registrations under specialized GPLDs? I think we should think about timing here and our knowledge that, you know, local jurisdictions, and we also have to deal with the Trademark Clearinghouse database the way it is, maybe not the way we would want it to be or the way we think it was structured. So it does have trademarks, it does have geographical indications, you know, some real, you know, in terms of priority, would allowing the registration for a city of the local trademarks, the regional or the national trademarks, even if they're not in the Trademark Clearinghouse database, you know, the timing, would it be appropriate to have that kind of, I'll use it, mini Sunrise before the main Sunrise, which then opens up to these geographical indications, and especially in light of the data we have about Deloitte. And, you know, again, the very broad scope of what's going into the Trademark Clearinghouse database, you know, should we be thinking about prioritizations that allow the local Sunrises to take place first? Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. And we have probably a little bit less than 3 minutes left. And so it's probably at that point of the agenda that we'll ask about any other business. And I'd like to ask Julie if she has anything that she wants to know. Kathy, your hand is up. Is that an old hand?
Thank you.
Okay, I take it that it is. So now George's hand is up, and then why don't I go to Julie first, because I had called her. Julie, if you could be very brief, and then to George. And so go ahead, Julie.
Oh, thank you very much. Staff would just like to mention suggested homework for next week. And we were going to suggest going on to the INTA survey as the homework. There's a couple of slides, and we also, in response to requests from the trademark claims subteam meeting, will also include the link to the survey results that had been provided to the working group back in August of 2017. So we're going to suggest that unless anyone has any other suggestions for homework. And just to remind people that this subteam does now have extended time to look at the previously collected data, so that we'll continue during the meetings on the 20th and 27th of February. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you. There's one more hand, George. This should be the last comment for the call. George, go ahead.
Yeah, George Kirkland, Swiss Transcript. I've made this point before, but you know, I still want to have a more reasonable deadline for the additional data to be submitted, because having it today is kind of, you know, ridiculous, given that it's not even going to be considered until 2 weeks from now. So having a deadline today would suppress those 50 data sources that I posted to the mailing list last night. You know, volunteers have limited time, and I've already devoted more than 10 hours this week to ICANN stuff. So this is stuff that was assigned to ICANN more than 18 months ago, and they delivered absolutely nothing. So I think the co-chairs and sub-team chairs should confer and adjust the timeline accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you, George. We are right at the top of the hour, and I see two hands up. I think they're old hands. Julie, is your hand an old hand?
Yeah, just very, very quickly, I forgot to mention that for anyone who has comments that they didn't have time or weren't able to add into the Google Docs, just to remind you, they'll be opened back up. So please do so, add them in, because that way we can be sure they're accurately reflected. Thanks.
Thank you, Julie, and thanks, everybody, for attendance and comments and interest, and we will close this call and see you all again next week. Thanks. Goodbye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. The meeting has been adjourned. Have a great day, everyone.